Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel, SI's Ross Gellinger, and SI's Pat Forty. Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We got a lot to get to today, and we're going to get to Georgia football and the high-speed drunk driving accident or crash that occurred on January 15th that led to the death of a recruiting staffer and an offensive lineman and injuries. And it involves Jalen Carter now, the potential number one pick in the draft. So we were going to get to a lot of that and what's going on at Georgia, because that's some troubling situation, a sad situation. We finally know more details. I think we'd all heard a lot of rumors about it, and sort of it's only so much you want to go with until the police have come out with their reports and stuff, but we did get that. In the interim, the Brandon Miller, University of Alabama basketball case continues. That also occurred on January 15th, quite remarkably, in a remarkable coincidence.
Same time.
Yeah, both incidents occurred at virtually the exact same time. One was at about 2:45 a.m. Eastern. One was 1:45 Central. Both involve, in some way, one of the top two or three or four picks of the NBA and NFL draft. Amazing. Amazing thing. Both tragic situations. Loss of life is some ugly stuff. Serious stuff. But I want to start with Alabama, because, Ross, you were at the Alabama-Auburn basketball game that was Wednesday night. This is Thursday morning that we're taping. Great basketball game. Very exciting game. Went to overtime. Alabama won. Not really interested in discussing that. I think Alabama counts on their fans, students, parents, professors only caring about beating Auburn and not everything else. They may be right. I don't know. But for all the rest of us, what was it just like being there in that environment, following the details of the downtown shooting, and Brandon Miller's involvement, and just everything going on, and the other players, and the lack of, you know, I mean, I tried to get like the president of the school to talk. Heck no, okay, nothing, no statements ever. Nobody saying anything. What was it just like there in this sort of dual world where we're celebrating one thing, but then there's this tragedy and controversy on the other side?
Yeah, I happened to be, I guess you could say, in town at somewhat good timing. I was coming in for football stuff and just kind of really just passing through, and it happened to fall on the day that they host Auburn in a game in which they could win the SEC championship. And then a week after all of the police revelations came out, latest revelations came out about Brandon Miller and you know, the murder scene in Tuscaloosa. It's two real things that happened, right, that inflamed this issue even more. One, the coach saying wrong place, wrong time, simultaneously as a hearing unfolded, revealing pretty jarring details of Brandon Miller and the gun being in this back seat and him arriving at the scene. And then the other thing, obviously, was the pat down, which that's what stuck out to me last night more than any other, kind of is like, it felt like everybody was watching what he was going to do. And so as he's walking up for the introductions, you just kind of felt the crowd like zooming in, and he did a little shoulder nudge with the staffer. So no pat down, and the rest of the players did like high fives and maybe some hugs and things like that. So it was an interesting environment. It was packed. Students were lined up overnight. They sold out about an hour before tip. They sold out of the 2,400 student tickets. It was an electric atmosphere. And you know, they won. Obviously, they came back an incredible game. They came back from 17 down with 10 minutes left. Brandon Miller hit some pretty big shots late in the game, ending overtime. Didn't have the greatest shooting night, right? He's like 3 of 12 or something, I think, from the floor. He had 17 points, 10 of those free throws. And then, of course, you know, after the game, they celebrate. And it was weird. I stayed out there a little bit for some of the celebration. And, you know, it was weird. They put on the championship shirts, right, and everybody's celebrating. And I understand them doing that, obviously. And they're going to celebrate a team victory and a championship. But given the circumstances, it was certainly an eerie kind of feeling. And then afterward, I addressed it in my story from here a little bit, but Brandon Miller obviously didn't talk and hasn't talked since the police revealed what they did last week in the hearing. Not only has Brandon Miller not talked, though, according to the beat writers here, no other player has talked for 7-8 days. That would change next week at the SEC tournament. In fact, I would expect Brandon Miller to talk next week. And if not next week, he'll be made to talk at the NCAA tournament.
It is like even last night, they can't fully avoid controversy. There was a bit of a scuffle between Wendell Green and Javon Quinterly, Green of Auburn, Quinterly of Alabama. And it starts getting heated, and Alabama players leave the bench area and come over, and two of them get ejected. Like, oh, good, let's get into a confrontation now. And there's always an excuse with fans, right, for everything. And this is, well, it was a timeout. They were celebrating. They were welcoming their team back to the bench. No. There was two of them that went way past half court, got down, one of them close to the altercation, the other one not as close. But, I mean, that's a clear no-no. Auburn didn't leave the bench. They didn't do that. So, and there you can see it. One Alabama staffer out there, like, waving wildly to get their guys back.
Yep.
So even then, I'm like, where is Nate Oates? Hello, is the team coached up on what to do here?
He was unaware. He was drawing plays. Yeah, he was unaware.
Yeah, he was in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
I mean, this is one of the issues. Like that happens, right? Basketball games, some kid runs down. This is one of the risks that they have is by doing nothing and saying almost nothing. If something that could happen that would not have been a massive deal 2 months ago is all of a sudden a massive deal. And I mean, they're like one kid throwing a punch from like, oh my goodness. And you know, right. If it just, and that would be a potentially unrelated act, but this is where you're at. This is the all in, right? You're all in, all the chips in the middle. We don't care about our reputation. We don't care about anything. You know, the no one's talking except Nate Oates. I don't think anybody at this school is really, nobody wants to own this decision, group decision. Said the president of the university has said nothing, no comments, no statements.
They gave you a very bland statement, didn't they?
From the school, not from him.
From the school, not from him.
Yeah, Stuart Bell, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking except Nate Oates, who's terrible at this. Hell of a basketball coach, but he's got tunnel vision. He just wants to win the title. I think Nate Oates probably talked everybody into it, and they went with it. That's why Nate Oates doesn't get a say normally. You talk to any coaches, they're like, well, that's a university decision. That's above my thing. But when they laid it out, as Greg Brinson, well, I had a conversation with Nate Oates, his group decision, Nate Oates. Like, of course, you want your coach to be like, hey, let me think about the big picture here. But that's not how coaches act. And certainly not this guy, right? Incredible basketball coach. Great team. This team's really exciting to watch, all that. But, so, you know, again, university president, nah, we don't care. Not saying a word. Because they don't want their name. No one wants their name associated with this story right now. And so it's like the machine and the fans that simply care about winning, you know, we beat Auburn. Okay, great. But, like, you're the president of the school, and there was a shooting right off a campus, and we're not really doing anything about it. But, hey, we beat Auburn. It's like, you're the president of the school? Yeah. Like, that's it? And they might, and I get it. They're 100% banking on, well, again, everyone's going to hate us. We torched our reputation, but our fans, our students, our parents, our professors, our community, all they care about is beating Auburn. They don't care about anything other than beating Auburn. And we can do anything and let anything go as long as we beat Auburn and win the national title, make the final. We've never been to a Final Four. This isn't even football. And they're probably right. And it's not just Alabama. This would be the case if everyone goes, well, if the roles were reversed and the player was at Auburn, you guys would all be screaming. That's true. And if the roles were reversed and the player was at Auburn, all the Auburn fans would be defending. Like, that's just the nature of fans. Like, there's nothing unique about Auburn, about Alabama. It's just they're the ones going, hey, man, you know, the guy said there was a T-shirt over the gun. I don't know. I mean, Nate Oates said he didn't know. It's like, okay, so we had one player in the team's facing capital murder. One guy drove the gun over. Another guy was there. The gun ended up in an apartment of some players. It was in Quinterly's room wrapped in a bloody sweatshirt, but he wasn't even there. So yeah, I shouldn't even mention his name. That guy, you know, right? All those things happened and no one on the team, there was no little chatter in the locker room or on a bus. No one was talking. No one heard a thing. Nobody heard a thing about this gun. Like, man, if someone puts a murder weapon in my room, wrapped in a bloody sweatshirt, there's going to be a discussion. No one heard anything. No one knows anything. It's like, okay, no, we're good. Beat Auburn. That's just college sports. It's crazy. It's a machine that is nobody can control or is even willing to try. It's just no comment. Hope Nate Oates doesn't say something stupid for the 14th time this week.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Yeah, that's it. It's college sports, baby. But don't pretend it's anything else.
Right. That's the thing, is let's not pretend that there is some, you know, serious high-minded ideals behind this. There's not. There's clearly not. Brandon Miller is too good to bench. That's the deal. That's what's going on
here. Yep. Yeah. So wild scene. Now, post-game, Brandon Miller is going to say nothing next week. He shouldn't. You can say, well, he's just a cooperating witness. You're never not capable of being arrested. Okay? Unless you have an immunity deal written down, you always have the threat. So if I'm Brandon Miller and he has a good attorney, now whether he's agreed to cooperate with who's he going to testify with? Does he have some kind of handshake deal? I don't know. But unless there is a written statement that you are immunity, I wouldn't. And I am at the scene of a murder and I witnessed a murder and I brought the gun and two bullets went into my windshield. I'm not saying a damn word. I'm not saying a damn word because I could be in legal jeopardy. I'm not saying a damn word because someone was murdered and you don't know who else is out there. Right? Brandon Miller should say nothing. Right. And they're going to put it, Brandon Miller will be under a tremendous amount of heat next week as he has to stand there uncomfortably and say something like, I can't comment on that. And he can't.
Right. Yeah. He'll say, I'm a cooperating witness in an investigation and can't discuss the incident or the case, you know. And that's what you'd expect. That's what his defense attorney has had told him probably to say. And
if you are Alabama and you do not know very much about what happened in a tragic murder situation that got one player expelled from school and kicked off the team, and you do know that there were two other players present. You know that. But you don't know anything else, and you haven't been filled with enough curiosity and anxiety to have people in the damn courtroom for that hearing? I sure as hell would, because you can go, because the media was there. Well, who?
I don't know. They better have sent an attorney over there.
That attorney should have been on the phone like that to university counsel, to the president, to Greg Byrne.
Nobody alerted Nate Oates. That was really the problem.
Say,
but the press conference.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Brandon Miller had the gun. That should have been communicated ASAP.
It's awkward and it's going to continue to be awkward, to put it mildly. But team's capable of winning it all. There's no question. So it's going to continue to be. I know after the game, Joe Goodman, the really good columnist at AL.com, who's trying to cover this, he's not gotten into the party line. And so he tried to get a question asked at the press conference. He was not called on. So we're already going that route.
Yeah, that was sad. And I was, you know, I was in there I was in the presser. And you got the biggest outlet in the state's columnist
in the Alabama Auburn game.
right. So that's not a good look. And then I think earlier in the week, right, it came out that the SID asked the media to only ask questions about, you know, it just, there's some missteps happening. One thing I wanted to say, and I think we'll find out in the coming weeks about this, and I think it was hinted at in one of the statements, maybe even from police, that there was video footage. And so we're gonna end up. There's some more evidence that's gonna come out.
Yeah.
And I think some people on campus and certainly in the community here have heard enough about the video footage to be comfortable with Brandon Miller playing and not being suspended. But we'll see in the coming weeks, I think, when that evidence kind of surfaces. I don't know if it'll ever, at some point it becomes public record, but it'll probably come out at some point in court.
Trial, yeah.
Yeah.
If these guys don't plea out, which they might, I mean, they're facing death penalty. So, you know, you can plea down and do that. Yeah. Well, the video certainly will determine the whole police allegation that they blocked the car in. I don't know if that's, you know, that seems to be a disputed fact, certainly by a defense attorney. And the fact he never got out of the car is a defense attorney was very adamant about that. So I expect that there's not video evidence that suggests otherwise, but the police never said he did. So,
right. No,
you know, the defense attorney argued a whole bunch of points that no one ever alleged. So, but
I will real quickly, though, I will say, you know what, props to Joe Goodman for columnizing without fear or favor, which is a more rare instance these days than it should be, in my opinion. But he's going to write what he believes, and that's what he should be doing.
All right. So the other tragedy in the story is the details that came out Wednesday, both from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and then law enforcement and I guess the prosecutor's office out of Athens on the January 15th crash. It basically came out because the AJC's done a good job reporting these details. And then Jalen Carter was up at the combine and he got arrest warrants put out for reckless driving and racing. They're both misdemeanors. You get up to $1,000 fine, up to a year in prison or jail. I don't suspect he'll ever serve any time on something like this, but you know, whatever. It certainly shook the draft and created big news because Jalen Carter is potentially number one pick in the draft for the Bears, or he's going to be a top 4 or 5 pick. So I don't think he gets to 5 even with this. But the details of the night are more clear, and it's just a brutal situation.
Horrible
situation. A number of players and recruiting staff members in the Georgia football program were out on that night, presumably celebrating, whatever. They were out. They wound up late night out drinking. So at least some of the people, they were at the Immortal Toppers International Showroom in Athens. Not a car showroom. Pretty funny, that part. They decided to go to the Waffle House. One of the cars is driven by Chandler LaCroix, who is a staff member. Devin Willock is in the car, an offensive lineman. So is it Warren McClendon. And another recruiting staff member, Tori Bowles. So as the police have it, they leave downtown Athens to go to the Waffle House. It's about 3 miles. Pat, you know this area very well. Your son went to Georgia. Anyone been to Athens, these are pretty big landmarks. They're going to go. LaCroix has a car, Ford Expedition, that is generally used to drive recruits around. It's like a rented university car, but it's kind of like a pool car. I've been told that people just, you know, that's commonly used to transport people and all that. Not supposed to be used at night for personal use, but it is. Maybe that'll matter in various lawsuits. She has a 0.197 blood alcohol level.
Whew. Yeah.
Well, more than twice the,
While drag racing, 100 miles per hour. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So she pulls up to a stoplight. Jalen Carter is in his, he's got a real nice Jeep Cherokee Trackhawk that he got in an NIL deal. He pulls up to a stoplight. She pulls in behind him. There's also a third car, a Dodge Charger with Jason Dumas Johnson, potentially the driver. The video surveillance obtained by AJC.com shows they pull up. Carter takes off at the light, like with a speed that makes pedestrians turn their heads in surprise. So he's, I guess, racing. LaCroix accelerates behind him and then passes a couple cars, one to the right, one to the left, to try to, I guess, chase him. This would be the race. And they end up on Barnett Shoals Road. It's a pretty major road in Athens. It's got like five lanes, got two lanes and then a turn lane in the middle and then two on the other side. It's not a divided highway in any way. It is a major street, but it is a city street. This is not, I'm out in Wyoming and there's nobody around. I'm going to open this car up.
Right.
Let alone with a 1.97 blood alcohol level. Apparently, LaCroix gets ahead of Carter at some point, but about a mile to go before the Waffle House, police said they believe the LaCroix's vehicle reached 104 miles an hour. Again, like that road, stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, 104. They weaved in and out of traffic. This is not a car that handles particularly well. I mean, it's just the idea of driving so far. Right front tire hits a curb. The car flies off the road. I'm still a little, it flies off the road. It shears through two utility poles that's going so far, hits at least two trees, and then crashes into an apartment building. Willock was seated behind LaCroix, flew out of the car and died on the scene. Croy was non-responsive. They took her to the hospital, and she was pronounced dead there. Carter was there, apparently, then left. I think legally he's not obligated to stay. It wasn't his accident. Georgia's football director of player support, Brian Gant, shows up. About an hour and a half later, Gant gets Carter to come back to the scene. Police see there are marks on the roof of his car that they believe were made by falling power lines. So when the utility pole was sheared, the lines came down and hit Carr. So he was presumably behind.
Good God. He could have got really in. I mean,
And if someone's going 104 and you're that close, you're going.
Yeah.
He gives varying statements about how close he was, racing, whatever. Probably the biggest observation for Carter is that the police did not observe him to be under the influence of anything, gave no test at all for blood alcohol content. I'm not going to question the police. They have a very hard job to do, but I would pretty much test everybody.
You think?
2 a.m. Yeah. But hey, they didn't see it. So Carter does not have that. And thank God, I hope he didn't. This is absolutely
shocking. They didn't test him. That is shocking.
Didn't test him. Well, yeah. I mean, he might have been literally just so clear eye. I have no idea. But generally, you'd think, geez, I'm testing everyone. But if someone's clearly not, I don't know. But he left for an hour and a half. You're not sobering up in an hour and a half. Whatever.
No.
I mean, there are two deceased here. This is a serious investigation now. This isn't like there's. Examples in this AJC story of like other guys getting pulled over and just, hey, slow down and all that. This is a really tragic situation, but this is absolute. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, driving that drunk at that speed, you are either killing yourself or you're killing someone else.
Yeah. Again, like the Alabama situation, fortunate there aren't more people dead. I mean, it's awful that there are two people dead, but there could be more. There absolutely could have been more.
Yeah. You know, there's other examples now. They're peeling back through. Dumas Johnson was arrested on February 22nd on a reckless driving and racing in another incident. Carter had been ticketed for going 89 in a 45 back in September.
Got 89 in a 45.
Holy cow.
Got a $1,000.
Yeah, so he's done. He does the racing quite a bit then.
He's done it before.
Uh-huh.
So,
man, I don't understand. Man, am I too old? Is this what the kids do nowadays? They go
fast and
furious, drag baby. Race on a city street? I mean, what the hell is wrong with people? God.
It's astonishing to me. It really is. And I like, again, too, where is the learned behavior and the discouraged behavior? You get ticketed for 89 and a 45. First of all, you do that, you're crazy. But secondly, you get ticketed for it. And you pay a $1,000 fine. And according to the AJC, there was dash cam footage there, body cam footage from the cops saying, you know, you don't want to go to jail for this because it'll be a big old deal. So they let him off to a degree. They could have arrested him and taken him downtown. Maybe charges wouldn't have stuck, but they could have, and they didn't. And then you come back and do this? Like, where's the learning here?
Yeah.
Unless you think you can do anything you want and there's not going to be any repercussion. And again, right. Yes, so to Dan's point, I know the road. My son lived on Barnett Shoals Road. He was in an apartment complex. It was about a half mile from where he lived. Icon Apartments down the road from where the tragic part ending of this race occurred. And to think of driving, it's a 45-mile-an-hour area. To think of driving 100 is just absolutely suicidal/homicidal. I mean, if that's what's going to happen if you're drunk. Are you kidding me?
By the way, as we're podcasting here, Jalen Carter has been released from jail. He posted bond.
Quickly,
and he's back in Indianapolis at the combine, going to be completing interviews and other activities, measurements and such.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, I will say is, this will be a very hard interview for Jalen Carter, whether it's with the media or whether it's with NFL teams themselves, to sit there and answer questions. He's not very comfortable in these situations because Georgia has shielded him all season from doing media, which is not doing him any favors.
He's not going to do any media.
Well, but he's got to talk to the NFL guys, Dan.
Well, yeah, he does, but teams. He won't. He won't. He it actually gives him the out. Man, I can't talk about that. I mean, he can't. He's a defensive.
They got to grill him on drag racing in general, right? If he'd been previously speeding, God, I mean that you think about an NFL team investing millions and millions of dollars in a human. I'm gonna tell you what, like in his contract, it'll say. I bet it'll say somewhere, right? No racing, no speeding in a car. Maybe. God,
if this doesn't. If you and you're right, Ross, they will, and that'll be this is the concern because you go, what do you do? This is just, but like if this doesn't, it's really easy to stop drag racing. Yeah. Like this isn't like I'm addicted to this drug or something. I mean, like just don't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, you're the number 3 pick in the draft, 4 pick in the draft. You've got an incredible future. You're not going to fall that far. You just say, man, I'm never doing that again. I'm going the speed limit. Really easy to do. Very easy behavior to correct. So that's why he will not, unless more comes out about him. And there have been, you had Todd McShay kind of hinting to either this, and I think there had been a lot of rumors about this that the NFL certainly knew was, Carter was there and all that. And I think that maybe that's what came back. But yeah, just you got to stop. I mean, two people died. One of your teammates died.
Yeah.
You're a recruiting staffer who her behavior that night, criminal, reckless, reprehensible, and again, fortunate she didn't kill more people. But I would imagine, not to minimize what happened, and she, but otherwise everyone liked, right? The testimonies, everyone's disappointed in this. I guess, if I'm Kirby Smart and I assume this is happening, I mean, the amount of time spent on no more drag racing, and driving slow. I mean, you wouldn't think that the Georgia football program needs to bring in like driving instructor. Like, this is it. I mean, I would be having 10-hour meetings. Like, we're going to meet every day. This is unbelievable. We have people die in our program. We have you could have killed people in the streets. I don't know. I mean, is anybody going to get suspended? Is that what you need to do? What it's a tricky situation for Kirby to speak on publicly, but he should.
He sure hasn't.
Yeah, he sure hasn't. And again, it's the same mentality of college athletics, and we love college athletics, but it's like if you win, you get so big you don't have to answer to anybody, and there's nobody bigger in college athletics than Kirby Smart. But if Georgia's winning, and maybe the banking is that only thing anybody cares about is Georgia winning. But if I lived on that street and said, wait, there were 3 people potentially coming down that street going 100 miles an hour, this is insane. So, but it's like, well, he doesn't owe anybody anything. I think he does. I know I'm in the, God forbid we hold anybody accountable, let alone anybody. And no one's accountable to anything in this country anymore. But, there's people who live in these towns that aren't fans, that are just people and aren't just, 104.
Yeah.
And what appears to be a repeated pattern of speeding within the program. This is a weird thing, but this has got to get cracked down. And they knew about every ticket. One thing about like these cops, you didn't just, you get a ticket, your boss probably doesn't know you got a speeding ticket. They do it, or if you get pulled over and the cop lets you off on a little warning, they know it in these towns. They know.
You mentioned Brian Gant. I mean, I've heard he's the fixer guy in the program. You get in trouble, you call Gant, and he will come and try to help things out. So, you know, every program has those people, I think, especially in the SEC. But, yeah, if I'm Kirby Smart, I'm certainly standing in front of the team and saying, you get a speeding ticket, you get a 5-mile-an-hour speeding ticket, you're suspended for 3 games or whatever number. You know, you are not playing because we are not going to do this anymore. But you've got at Georgia and a lot of other places all over the SEC, all over the country, I am sure. Look, one of the nice things about NIL, you can afford big, fast cars. Better know how to drive it and drive responsibly. There's a lot of college people, not just athletes, but there's a lot of college kids that drive very irresponsibly. But you're putting very powerful, fast cars at the hands of some very bad drivers. And there needs to be a lesson from Georgia to everybody in their athletic department, really, about this. The other thing, though, too, I wanted to go back to this, where Jalen Carter has been shielded from talking to anyone publicly or outside of the program for so long. He, again, is not comfortable doing it. He's got to go to these NFL interviews, and he's got to answer hard questions. I don't know whether he's prepared for it. Well, I tried to talk to him. Let me give me a second here. Like, he did not talk to the media for like 6 months. This is the best player on Georgia, the best player on the number one team in the country. They didn't have him talk to anybody. They brought him out before the national championship game, and it was a painful interview. He was not comfortable. He wasn't good at it. Simple questions he had a hard time with. He was asked then. There were character concerns then, well before this crash. That was Todd McShay opened that can of worms, and everybody's like, oh, no, it's unfair. It's unfair. It's not true. Maybe now you wonder. But I think Georgia did him a disservice in terms of helping his maturity and his professional future by not having him out talking to people.
Yeah. It's a fair criticism. He's going to lean on Drew Rosenhaus's attorney to, you know, be prepared for these statements, these interviews. But yeah, there's going to be a very uncomfortable interview process. However, I imagine he will not go. He will not fall far in that draft.
One tiny inside baseball thing here. Alan Judd is one of the bylines in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on this stuff. If you're Georgia and Alan Judd's on the case, your stuff better be in order because he is a bulldog reporter. That's your inside journalism baseball. So hope Georgia's got their house in order if Alan Judd's starting to poke around.
Yeah, I don't think the AJC is backing down on it, and there's just a lot.
Because of the reporting, right, some of this came out, right? And the police, it wasn't an hour after the story dropped, the police issued the arrest warrant because AJC got the video footage?
Yeah, AJC had the story, and then all of a sudden, coincidentally, here comes the things. Yeah. Again, if I'm the president of Georgia, and I, you know, I'm not, I don't know how to run a college campus, but I would want an investigation into, like, well, what is going on with these cars and the speeding, and what do we know? That's what I would want to know. You know, there's not going to be that. And it's not just Georgia or you know, like Michigan played Mozzie Smith this year. Mozzie Smith got charged with a, you know, felony gun, driving with a gun. They just kept playing them. They didn't care.
Sure. No.
You know, there's no hey, you shouldn't do that. Why don't you sit for a couple games? You're driving around with a, you know, it's like, nah, whatever. We'll get that worked out. So, you know, nobody cares. And it's like, do you do an investigation? In this situation, you had a student athlete die. You had an employee die. You had another student athlete injured. You had another employee injured. It's a wild drunk driving accident in a university vehicle that shouldn't have been used. Why are all these guys together? There are other people there. There's a culture. If I'm the University of Georgia, I'm saying, I want to know what's going on. And that, if that means Kirby Smart has to come in and answer questions too, then he has to do it. Are they doing that? I don't know, but I doubt it because that's just the way it works, you know?
Yeah. Well, Kirby's issued a couple of statements, but he hadn't sat in front of he hadn't answered any public questions.
Yeah, certainly not public, and I don't know private. Like, just because that's the stuff. If I'm running an organization, I'm like, what happened? I mean, you know, I don't know. But yeah, very, very, very interesting.
Three more ahead, the president.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the most influential presidents out there. He's like the head of the SEC President's Council or whatever. I mean, he's a big deal, and he's not just spring chicken. He's done this a long time. But I would be on the phone. Kirby, come to my office Monday.
I was just about to mention Jerry Moorhead and the Georgia president and how powerful he is within college athletics, within the SEC, how close he is with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And I've heard enough from inside of Georgia and inside the SEC about how influential Jerry Moorhead is and how intense, might be the right word, Jerry Moorhead is. He's a big sports fan. He keeps up with everything, and he stays on top of the, let's put it that way. He stays on top of those under him. And I would imagine that he's going to be involved in this pretty heavily. And if he hasn't already called Kirby to the office and AD Josh Brooks, then it's going to happen. Just knowing a little bit about him. But yeah, he was the head at, I don't know if he still is, at the SEC President's Council, but he was the chair, I believe, of the Division I Board of Directors, and was like the chair of the Constitution Committee. So he's a pretty powerful guy and very close to Greg Sankey.
Yeah, well, good. I hope they do. I mean, there's going to be a million lawsuits on this, and beyond what criminally happens. Again, Carter's, legally it's fairly limited. He's not the one that got drunk and drove. He can't make someone race him. He isn't responsible for a lot of this stuff. So, but this is what creates this all these details coming out. But there should be a lot. All right. This has been a heavy and serious conversation, and that's fine. We don't mind discussing those issues. We're not going to be the ones on here going, we really prefer to talk about the games. I prefer not to talk about people dying and all of that, but we're good with serious issues, and we'll always will be. So if you're just picking up on this show, please subscribe and continue to listen, because we will give it, may not be popular always, but we're not backing down from any of it. But we do have fun here, and this is supposed to be a good time. And this one came across my note, the Big 12 basketball tournament. They're trying to have a good time with this. They're trying to pump up the basketball. It's a great best league in the country. Yeah. Shaq is going to DJ. They got a whole bunch of people coming down to the Big 12 tournament. You should go.
DJ Diesel.
Yeah, T-Mobile Center. DJ Diesel.
I went to go see DJ Diesel, by the way, in D.C. Yeah. My wife and I went to go see DJ Diesel. We were all excited. We went to this club to go see DJ Diesel. We got there, show's supposed to start at 10, and we're like, all right, well, it'll be like 10:30, 11 before he gets to stage. And maybe this is old man Ross and Liz, old couple, right, getting to getting to the, hoping by 11:30 he shows up. At 12:15, we left. He hadn't shown up yet.
Really?
That is old man Ross. Come on. Shaq ain't doing nothing at 10:30. Come on. That's poor work.
Older man Pat wouldn't have even gone. So
I just sip a bourbon and hear DJ Shaq. DJ Diesel. Anyway, DJ Diesel's going to be there. So if you're in Kansas City, go to – it's a heck of a basketball tournament. But I'm not – we normally do a segment called Would You Eat It? Various crazy foods that occur, particularly at the Texas State Fair as a annual staple. I'm not going to do Would You Eat It, because I think anybody would eat any of this. But the Big 12 has done a school-specific food item. Hashtag Big 12 Eats. Big 12 Eats. So there'd probably be pictures. So I'm going to run through them. And I guess, you can comment or not. I think
we can decide which one's the best one.
How about that? Okay.
I love this, by the way. This is cool. I love the food thing.
It's a great idea.
Great idea. And I'm going to start with the funniest one is the Baylor float. Okay. Baylor. God bless Baylor, right? But it is kind of known as the boringest damn school. Waco, it's nothing. It's just sort of, it's steady, right? Baylor.
No, a Baylor school, they're not going to.
It's not a party school. It's not this. You know, a Baylor guy, like you want your Baylor. My accountant's from Baylor. Good. I'm not getting audited. My accountant is from Baylor. So you'll see how wild all these foods get. The Baylor float is vanilla ice cream, the boringest ice cream, and Dr. Pepper. That's it. That's their item. Good, big solid item. Area, so. Sounds delicious, but it does, you know, right? If this is like LSU, they're throwing a jalapeno in there. They're like doing something, right? Yeah. Baylor, vanilla ice cream and Dr. Pepper, just like my great grandma made.
I love it.
So that's Baylor float, vanilla ice cream, Dr. Pepper. Okay. So each one's got, it's very unique to the schools. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. The Cyclone Tenderloin, Iowa State. They should have had a side of water on this. They should have imported the failure by the Big 12. But the Cyclone Tenderloin, a Kaiser bun, breaded pork tenderloin, sliced onions, sweet and spicy pickles. Like, even in Ames, Iowa, they're throwing a spicy pickle on there. Not Baylor.
There you go.
Baylor.
Love that. I've been to the Iowa Beef Steakhouse, which I can't remember whether it was in Ames or Des Moines, but it was on a road trip to cover a basketball game at Iowa State. And so the tenderloin, very apropos.
The breaded pork tenderloin is a staple in Iowa. Yes. No question. They always, they would make like the presidents have to eat one just to like try to win the votes. Always come with us. Right. From the caucus. 100 years, every president was like, I don't want to eat that thing. They got to eat it and smile. Best pork tenderloins in the world. Please caucus for me. Anyway, the Jayhawks mac and cheese. And again, you think Kansas, you're not thinking real interesting. More interesting than Baylor. Pasta and creamy white cheese sauce topped with house-smoked pulled pork, Levi's signature barbecue sauce, and crispy fried onions. So they work in the Kansas City barbecue.
There you go. All right.
Heart attack on a plate, but yeah. K-State's Wabash Cannon Dog.
The hell is that?
Bacon-wrapped jumbo hot dog topped with Wildcat purple relish.
There you go.
Going to need a little more detail on the Wildcat purple relish, but.
Do we really need to wrap a hot dog in bacon? Jesus.
The little apple don't play.
I think we do, man.
Golly. Damn, man.
The hot dog wasn't bad enough for you.
I know.
I'm regretting my conference tournament coverage decision now. I want to go to this tournament.
Oh, well, at some point on the pod, maybe next week, SEC basketball tournament, we need to get into what each SEC town would have as their.
Yeah, maybe we can do that.
Meal. Oh, yeah.
That would be a good one to do next week.
I think the about food that of, and get in. The food of the SEC is generally better. It's certainly like the old Big 12 North or big, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Again, yeah. We've dealt with Baylor, Iowa, and two in Kansas. Anyway, that's it. The Stormin' from Norman, Oklahoma taco. Stormin' from Norman, Oklahoma taco. Fry bread topped with ground beef, shredded cheese, chopped tomatoes, beans, onions, and chili. Hope this is not ordered by the guy sitting next to you at the T-Mobile Center.
The other one was heart attack on a plate. That is gas on a plate. So
Porter Moser had one before the game and had to like leave in the second half. Go back to the locker room for a little while. Stormin' from Norm, please eat after the game and then leave the T-Mobile Center. Pistol Pete's OSU fried corn, the Oklahoma State. Pistol Pete. Oh, you know they have those great they use Pistol Pete in all their logos, like the dentistry school and stuff. I want to see this one. They have great. Pistol Pete is a hysterical mascot. Pistol Pete's OSU fried corn. This is beyond me. Elote style. Is that it? E-L-O-T-E.
Elote corn. Yeah. It's like a seasoned corn.
Kind of, okay.
A little spice on it.
Yeah. All right. How did I say it?
Elote.
Elote style bacon fried corn topped with crushed Doritos.
Ooh. Okay.
So I like that they go heavy with the really good seasoning and then they just throw some Doritos on it.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't enough. Bacon fried corn. Bacon fried. The TCU loaded tots. Tater tots, spicy queso sauce, chopped house smoked brisket, pico de gallo, topped with horn frog purple sour cream.
Ooh,
Again, details on what is it, the purple? Everyone wants to throw their purple on there. K-State and TCU.
Yeah. And then purple's not necessarily a great food thing, you know?
So. All right, well, you never know. The Longhorn quesadilla. Triple cheese quesadilla. Choice of steak or chicken.
Here we
with
go.
With burnt orange salsa rojo sauce.
Sounds good.
Great.
I'm in on that.
Great Mexican food in Austin. I have no doubt this could be pretty good.
Oh, yeah. You could maybe get that at El Arroyo, and it would be good.
Tex-Mast Rider Burger. Texas Tech. Tex-Mast Rider Burger. All beef patty, cheddar, fried onion rings, sweet pickled jalapenos, and Red Raiders barbecue sauce. So there's that. Pretty basic. And then the West Virginia Mountaineer Roll, which is just a pizza roll, for which is popular in Pennsylvania, Western PA, and West Virginia. A sliced pepperoni and mozzarella cheese and a soft roll. Kind of like a calzone kind of thing, but not really.
Yeah, I was wondering what West Virginia was bringing to the table.
Well,
hey, next year,
Lord knows what they could have been bringing to the table.
Right. Right, possum. Never mind.
Fried possum sandwich.
Fried possum. Just a barrel of bourbon. How about that? Mountain moonshine. Right. How about that?
We don't eat. Moonshine. We just drink.
Possum and moonshine bar.
Yeah. There you go.
Next year, they get to bring in Cincinnati and UCF and BYU. I mean, we'll see.
Cincinnati with the chili, whatever crap.
Yep. That'll be horrible.
Skyline chili, which is
Skyline
not
chili. Shout out to Michael Casagrande. Skyline. Skyline. That's about right. Skyline chili. He loves him some Skyline chili, which I think is
terrible. Yeah. It's terrible. You have it once, and then you're like, what? I cannot believe this is popular. It's Skyline Chili's everywhere, though. They love it in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. They do.
I don't know.
Although, you get up there, and like, I think I've had this discussion with Mick Cronin, the one of the ultimate Cincinnati guys. There's some other kind of chili up there that he says is better. So,
Well, anything's better.
Well, yes. he's right. Everything is better.
It's a cinnamon chili kind of thing. Yeah. On noodles, on spaghetti. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Baylor, you know, look, at the end of the day, they got the only dessert. And the vanilla ice cream and Dr. Pepper, I mean, it's a classic. You can't go wrong with it, right?
But right.
Everyone else is really going, like, modern. They're going, I mean, get like the Joanna and Chip Gaines. Can they come up with a recipe or something for you? The fixer-uppers? Right, that's like the biggest thing that ever happened in Waco, other than that Colt thing.
I think Scott Drew would appreciate.
Let's go, Scott.
He would be happy. He would be happy with a vanilla and Dr. Pepper.
He really would. He would be good with it. He's like, it's a good solid choice. What are you talking about? Who's not happy? Drink, and you're right. Right, he's so positive. He'd talk us into five star Michelin starred review for the. He would find a way. Anyway, that is your dining options at the Big 12. We want reports.
Yeah.
Pictures, whatever. Send it to us, whatever else you got. And that is our show. We'll have plenty more next week. We didn't even get to all of our news of the weird, let alone all our issues. So plenty to go. Continue to subscribe to this podcast. You had something to add, Pat?
Nope.
All right. Continue to, if you do, because we can go long. You know, these guys are came this long. You're probably still listening. We made everyone hungry. That was our problem. Continue listening. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. Please subscribe. We appreciate everyone who sticks with us. We will talk to you later.